I'm Kirsty McKenzie. I'm the Chief Exec and founder of iMultiply, a finance and executive search recruitment business. And this is the first of our podcast series with influential business professionals. And today I am delighted to welcome Tanya Costell, an experienced non-executive director and the founder and chief exec of Changing the Chemistry. Tanya, welcome to the iMultiply couch.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us today. So tell me about Changing the Chemistry.
So Changing the Chemistry started almost 6 years ago. We are now a charity. We operate as a voluntary peer support network, mainly across Scotland, but we have some people further afield, including one on Australia, slight anomaly. And what we do is we are looking to improve diversity of thought in the boardroom in order to improve board effectiveness. So we help people from diverse backgrounds get onto boards. We then help them perform once they're in those roles. And we also work with organisations who want to make their boards more diverse to help them think about how to go about that.
Brilliant. And why did you start this organisation?
What happened was I was in the process of developing my own board portfolio at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was also roughly when Lord Davis was talking about women on boards. Mm-hmm. And I kind of thought, well, it would be much quicker if I, you know, having gone through the experience and worked out how to go about getting on a board and what you need to do. And then obviously when you're there, it can at times be quite tough as well. So being able to have people to talk to and share experiences was very helpful. So I thought, well, that will accelerate it. And when we initially got a group of people together, it had come from, I'd been at a conference called Inspiring Women Leaders, Dare We? And there were a group of people who'd been at that who were interested in boards who I sort of gathered together. Right. And when we had that discussion, we said, well, actually, it's not about women on boards. What we really care about is better decision making. And therefore, it's about having a range of perspectives. And therefore, it's about diversity of thought.
Because, I mean, there is a lot of news, podcasts, articles out there, statistics, you know, about why diversity is important. Mm. But I was just keen to get your opinion on that, given your experience.
Yes, I mean, I think so. There is a lot of research that will show that diverse teams perform better. Mm-hmm. So you get greater creativity, innovation, and one can see that by having all those different views, you're not all going to say, oh, right, you know, slam dunk, right, we all think the same way, all come from the same background, so yes, you know, let's go ahead. And so I think by having that challenge, you can come up with different ways and different experiences. So that's diverse teams. When you look at diverse boards, it's harder. You can see correlation in the data, i.e. so having diverse management teams, having diverse boards, there is a pickup in financial performance. So there's mm-hmm. a business case behind it. You can't prove that that's because the boards are more diverse, because obviously there are lots of things that make an organisation work. But there is strong correlation, and particularly McKinsey did a report which was published in 2015, which showed a 10% pickup in, I think it was earnings before interest and tax, for people who are in the top quartile of gender diversity, and a 35% pickup in financial performance if they had ethnic diversity on their board.
It's interesting to pull up on an earlier point about diversity not just meaning gender diversity, because obviously diversity can mean a number of things. Mm. And I have had a few conversations recently where people are also want to get a diversity in terms of age range as well. Yeah. As backgrounds and political beliefs and religious beliefs. I mean, it can mean a number of things. Interestingly though, so say someone's wanting someone from a different belief system or different age, especially say younger individuals, one of the barriers that I've seen is how do these maybe younger individuals actually get the boardroom experience that they need. Yep. to feel qualified enough to be able to contribute at that level?
Firstly, clearly that's somewhere where changing the chemistry can help. But being a peer support network, the whole idea of it is that we all help each other. And so that when you have a question, you have someone you can, you can look up. We have a membership platform and one can look up and say, okay, who is on an audit committee or who is involved in, I don't know, museums that I can speak to within the group who might be able to help me. But I think more, I think there are other things. So firstly, board observing. So understand, I think it's helpful to understand what a board looks like.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get more board observing opportunities so that you can actually understand how a board operates. I think that helps. The other thing, and I say this to a lot of people that I meet, is actually you'd be surprised. There are a lot of boards out there and actually sort of younger people can bring all sorts of things such as digital and social media awareness. There are opportunities for individuals who are younger to go on, particularly charity boards. I mean, there are something like 23,000 charities in Scotland alone. Mm-hmm. And if it feels like a bit of a daunting experience, then that's exactly where someone like Changing Chemistry, you have a whole load of people who can help. And we have a group that meets every 2 months for people who are on boards to share experiences and to kind of build that network so that, you know, as I say, when something does happen, you have someone you can pick up and sort of say, you know, have you had internal audit or, you know, what I can see that the chair and the CEO have come to loggerheads, you know, what would you suggest? You know, so that's how the sort of support process works.
It's really interesting about the trustee piece because I know a lot of people, and I myself have had experience as a trustee of a non-for-profit organisation, and it's been a very interesting experience for me, and I know these other individuals have gained a lot from it as well and felt that they're giving something, you know, back. But also I have heard the opposite in terms of some chairs of charities saying, well, because my board aren't being paid, I don't always feel that I'm therefore getting as much out of them as I would otherwise. Now, I know in your experience, you've done both, haven't you? Paid non-exec roles and unpaid. And I'm keen to understand if you've seen a difference.
I mean, I'm certainly always keen to keep my own portfolio being across all three sectors.
Okay.
Because I think that adds a great deal, and you learn in different ways. So I was on the board of community charity, which I then chaired for 3.5 years in the Highlands. I'm now on the board of Fetties. That's also a charity.
Yeah.
What I would say is, you know, you should not go on a board unless you are truly committed to it. So if you're not being paid, one of the things I would say is it's really important that you are passionate about whatever that element is. So when I went on the board of the community charity in the Highlands, that was where we have a house, and therefore very much it was a community I care passionately about. And this was an opportunity to get involved with a farmer who was putting up a wind farm, and he wanted the community to benefit from some of the profits from that.
And that's interesting because in my experience of boards, something that we've not done or has not been done, but I'm quite encouraging of, is board appraisals. And actually having a system to see whether we all think we've been effective.
And that's a very good idea.
Does that happen?
Some of my boards,
yeah.
We have appraisals, and then some we're kind of getting there, but haven't done yet. And you do kind of get this pushback with some where they go, well, you know, we're volunteers, you know, why should we have 360? And again, that in the good governance code, say, for the voluntary sector, that would come up as, you know, do you having that is good practice.
Yeah.
I think it is a very good way of, I mean, if you can do it on a sort of 360 and get anonymous input, it's a good way of airing and dealing with issues. I think the key thing is getting people comfortable with that, particularly if they've come from a background where they haven't necessarily had it in their workplace.
And I just think as well, if there's good governance and you've got a diverse board and you can reap the rewards of all the positive things that come from that, as you've touched on, there may be some challenges because you're dealing with people at the end of the day. Anything else that you think leaders should be doing to get the most out of their boards?
As I say, in some ways, there's a challenge by having more diverse boards, there is an element of, well, these are people I'm not necessarily comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Because clearly unconscious bias means that we all tend to look and recruit people who come from similar backgrounds and look and sound like us. So once you've got that group of people, it may be people that you're not necessarily that comfortable with. So I think there is actually something about how do you bring... A board's not exactly a team in my mind, in that there's an element of oversight of the executive.
Yeah.
So it's sort of... but it's... And there's also an element of you know, you don't want groupthink. There is... You have to have your own individual strength. But it's also how can you best pull out the strengths of everybody? So there is a, how do you bring that group of people together so that they understand and know the strengths of everyone? So certainly on a number of my boards, we think quite hard about spending some time outside the boardroom, both as a group of the non-execs, but also with the execs, so that you know each other and you understand how to play to the strengths.
What you're saying really is that maybe boards and leaders of organisations should be looking at ways outside the formal board meeting to actually just get to know
I think that's important. And also, to be a good board member, there is something about, if you think about, say, what happened with Volkswagen, you need to make sure that as a board member, you're not just getting your information from one source. So if you're only getting, say, reports or what have you from the CEO, that's lovely. And I'm sure, you know, most of the time that's fantastic. But you need to have some way of what I would call backtesting. You know, corporate governance has moved from trust to trust but verify. So you need to have interaction with the organisation in some way outside of board meetings to get a sense of, is what I'm being told in the boardroom the same as what I hear when I'm talking to employees within the organisation?
I like that. I've heard recently as well people bringing in... a guest into the end of a board meeting or at the start of a board meeting, for example, another senior manager within the business to present something to the board. Is that something that you've found?
It's certainly one way of giving that senior manager experience of what happens in a boardroom. So I think that's helpful for their development. The challenge for them potentially in terms of them actually giving you a different line is that the CEO is most likely in the room.
And I wanted to say to you, congratulations on your recent MBE.
Thank you.
So Tanya was awarded an MBE for services to diversity in business.
Yes.
Fantastic achievement.
I'm deeply humbled. Fantastic.
So I'm keen, therefore, to get your take on the sort of future of boardrooms and diversity in the boardroom. What do you think that looks like?
For me personally, I'm passionate about making boardrooms more effective because ultimately, I guess I'm keen on making the workplace a better place. And particularly if you look at gender diversity, for example, you get a lot of women leaving organisations sort of in the late 30s.
Yeah.
And my thinking is, you know, if we could make the workplace look completely different, then actually maybe people wouldn't want to do that because they still aspire to get to the top. Whereas some people, there's more research now showing that actually that environment is not a place that people want to be, working 24/7, traveling around the world or whatever it is. So how can we change the workplace? So I'm hoping by having more diverse boards, we start rethinking the shape of the workplace. Given that I work within diversity, I'm very aware of unconscious bias that everybody has. But I think there's still a lot of people who maybe are not as aware of unconscious bias. So we all talk about, you know, I meet chairmen who say, well, it's very important to have the right person for the job. And I go, absolutely. But of course, it's not a meritocracy because we all, again, go back to, we all want to recruit people who look and sound like us. So how you actually get comfortable with someone who looks maybe completely different, but recognise that actually they bring fantastic skills to your boardroom. It's still, you know, how to deal with that.
I think that's a very, very good point. One that I'm very interested in, because I think the more you can increase your own self-awareness with regards to issues like that or how you're making your own decisions and what you're really basing that on.
Exactly.
It will help with this unconscious bias because you're trying to be more conscious about
Your thoughts. I mean, some of the research I've read shows that, you know, if you are recruiting, being clear about what exactly it is, which sounds sort of fairly obvious, but then if you have, you know, the people who are involved in that, do they all have a common understanding and common agreement about what those specific things are, then that makes, and then you stick to, rather than, I mean, hopefully a lot of interviews these days have moved off from being a nice chat, which they maybe historically used to be, although not always the case, I've had some very rambling interviews when people are interviewing me, to something very much more structured,
yeah.
Then actually you can be sure that you are comparing apples with apples by taking that sort of, these are the things we're looking for and these are the questions we're going to ask.
I agree. Because obviously running a recruitment business, I mean, well, I see and hear a lot of different interview techniques, shall we say. But I think one of our roles is to push back and be truly consultative and ask really, really open and probing questions as to, you know, what is it you're really looking for and why? And yeah. what have you done to get to that decision? What was the process that you followed to get to that decision? And actually just by asking a lot of open and probing questions, yes. which some people really don't like because they just think, stop asking me questions, just go and find me that person.
Yes.
Well, actually, you know, have you really thought about why it's got to be this person? And actually, can we help you to open your eyes?
Well, exactly, because otherwise, potentially, they get the wrong person because
absolutely.
If they haven't connected it to their strategy and what it is they really want,
yes.
really good people, they'll fall at the first hurdle because the individual being interviewed will think, well, this person hasn't really thought it through.
Exactly. And that's why we work very closely with a number of businesses that want to also look at their recruitment process. So they want us to help them find them someone, but actually, on top of that, they'll help. You know, they want us to help them map out the most effective way of then measuring that individual's skill set.
Yeah.
But it is amazing, though, how many people still have conversations that I just think are completely unacceptable. We get calls, believe it or not, say, "Hey, we're looking to recruit. I want a male in their 30s."
Oh, really?
Now, we just don't deal with those businesses. We do not, you know. But what we try and do when we're telling them that we that's not how we would work, or that's not a business that has shared values. Mm. Plus, actually, that's against the law if they're actually, you know, discriminating against protected characteristics. But sometimes people don't actually realise that's what they're doing. So we'll try and push back and open their eyes to that. But I find that unbelievable in today's day and age that actually still happens, and I can tell you it does.
Which is why, for me, it's about continually sharing that message and getting it out there and repeating and repeating and repeating, because I don't necessarily think everyone is aware of diverse teams performing better. It's a business benefit. And as you say, that there are all those biases that also you need to think about in terms of recruitment.
No, I really buy into what you're doing, what you're trying to achieve. I think it's very commendable. I love changing the chemistry as an organisation, and think that you've done some fantastic things, but I can see that there's still
a long way to go.
I was going to ask you, actually, before I let you leave my couch, a bit of a controversial topic is about quotas, you know, in the boardrooms, and was keen to get your thoughts.
So I am probably in the more controversial side. I do support quotas, but on a short-term basis. So my view is, whilst you have unconscious bias, people will all feel more comfortable recruiting people who look and sound like them, albeit there are a whole load of firms who are doing huge amounts to try and correct and work against it. But certainly you look at, say, people like EY or KPMG, a lot of those big four firms, they've set targets across a whole set of characteristics, not just gender, but ethnicity, wide range. And in fact, the Women in Finance Charter that the Treasury introduced with following Jane Angardia's report about women in finance, that had four really simple principles, which was appoint someone very senior to look at diversity within your organisation, set targets, measure against the targets, and then compensate based on whether you reach the targets.
I think it's an interesting one, and I think whether you believe that quotas is the way to go or don't, actually those individuals probably agree that there still needs to be more of a level playing field. Mm. And actually, I think what we said at the start is true in that more and more people are recognising the importance of diversity.
Exactly.
How we get there might be debated,
but
I don't think there's many people debating that diversity is actually really positive in the boardroom and can have really good impacts on the organisation, which is great. Well, Tanya, thank you very much for joining me, and thank you very much for letting me pick your brains and sharing your thoughts.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us and listening to this podcast. If you want to stay in touch regarding business and recruitment news, please visit us at imultiplyresourcing.com.